are Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, no tax increase for the seventh year in a row, a $68.5 million budget proposal, and big changes on the ballot, including air conditioning for Liberty Elementary. What does it all mean for Liberty schools and taxpayers? We'll talk with Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan about the upcoming Liberty Schools May 20th vote. Also in the local schools, what does it take to create healthier, happier school communities? We'll talk with Sullivan 180's Megan Mullally-Gore and Mary Davis, a beloved school nurse with 20 years of experience at Livingston Manor Central Schools, about the power of wellness committees. Plus, checking in with some of our community podcasts on the CatsCast podcast, A Girl Got a Hike, Guided Hikes and Backpacking for Women, and You Can Trust Yourself, but only after a snack and maybe a nap. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney is set to visit President Trump at the White House today. NPR's Deepa Shivaram says the Canadian leader just won election to office last week.
The thing to keep in mind about Carney is that he won this election running with an anti-Trump message. Canadians were voting as Trump was ramping up his tariff war, and Trump continues to say he wants to make Canada into America's 51st state. So the election there was seen as a referendum against Trump.
NPR's Deepa Shivaram reporting. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has ordered a 20% reduction in the U.S. military's top brass. He's singling out cuts to four-star generals and admirals. Hegseth released a video online saying the cuts are not meant to punish high-ranking officers. He says the reduction will, quote, shift resources from bloated headquarters elements to warfighters. But the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Jack Reed, says getting rid of the nation's top military officers won't help the U.S. military be more efficient. It could cripple it. Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department reported a widening of the nation's trade gap. NPR's Scott Horsley has more.
The nation's trade deficit jumped to a record high, topping $140 billion in March, a 14% increase from the previous month. Imports jumped nearly 4.5% as businesses and consumers raced to stock up on foreign goods before worldwide tariffs took effect. Exports were also up during the month, but just barely. The rush of international trade is expected to slow now that President Trump has imposed the highest import taxes since at least the 1930s. Policymakers at the Federal Reserve will be weighing the fallout from the president's trade war as they begin a two-day meeting here in Washington. The central bank will announce its decision on interest rates at the conclusion of that meeting. They're expected to hold steady. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Hamas says there is, quote, no point in dealing with Israel to find a new ceasefire and hostage release deal. The comments come after Israel announced plans to greatly expand its military offensive in Gaza and take control of all food aid distributed in the enclave. NPR's Carrie Kahn has more from Tel Aviv.
Bassem Naim, a senior Hamas official, posted on social media that further talks with Israel are pointless given its, quote, starvation war in Gaza. Naim urged the international community to pressure Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to end, quote, the crimes of hunger, thirst, and killings. Israel has blocked all aid into Gaza for more than 2 months. Its cabinet approved the new plan, which would seize the territory, move nearly all of Gaza's population to the south, and take total control of all food and aid distribution, unless Hamas surrenders and releases the hostages still held in Gaza. Israel says it will wait to implement the plan, however, until after President Trump's trip to the region later this month. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 340 points. It's NPR. The Israeli military is striking Yemen again. The Israeli military has already carried out multiple strikes against a key port in Yemen. This week, Houthi rebels in Yemen fired a missile into central Israel. The U.S. has been bombing Yemen every day for about 7 weeks. The Houthis have been attacking shipping in the Red Sea. The Houthis say they are supporting Hamas militants fighting Israel. The Trump administration is asking a federal judge if it can drop a controversial lawsuit. The lawsuit is trying to restrict access to an abortion pill, mifepristone. This action is surprising because it is the same stance taken by the Biden administration. The next step in the case is for the judge to decide. Catholic cardinals are approaching the election of a new pope with prayer and reflection. NPR's Jason DeRose reports from Rome. The papal conclave begins tomorrow at the Vatican.
Church politics, social issues, and international affairs are certainly on the minds of the cardinals, but a papal conclave is also a deeply religious undertaking, marked by masses, prayers, hymns, and oaths. Cardinal-elector Michael Cherny says his brother cardinals approach the task with great seriousness.
We're looking for a Holy Father who is the successor of St. Peter, not the successor of Pope Francis.
Following a public mass in St. Peter's Basilica Wednesday morning, cardinals will enter the Sistine Chapel. Voting continues until they elect the next leader of the world's 1.4 billion Catholics. Jason DeRose, NPR News, Rome.
Pope Francis died of heart failure at the age of 88 last month following a stroke. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. This morning, we're focusing on local schools. First up, the Liberty Central School District's Board of Education approved a proposed $68.5 million budget for the 2025-26 school year, a plan that preserves all current programs while enhancing efficiency and aligning district-wide goals. It also comes with no increase to the tax levy for the seventh year in a row. Voters will get their say on this proposal during the annual budget vote on Tuesday, May 20th. Also on the ballot, a nearly $7.5 million capital project to bring air conditioning to Liberty Elementary, addressing new state heat regulations, and elections for three Board of Education seats with five candidates vying for three-year terms. I spoke with Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan about what this means for the community, finances, and the future of education in Liberty.
Well, overall, I think the key numbers to be cognizant of for our proposed budget that will be voted on by our community on May 20th at Liberty High School Media Center. The proposed budget is $68,508,362, and that is a 0.7% increase compared to our current budget, which that increase is $474,068. But another important number is our proposed tax levy, which again is from similar to the past several years, specifically 7 years, 0% increase. So our tax levy, similar to this year's, would be $17,760,162.
This is the seventh consecutive year with no increase to the tax levy. How has the district managed to maintain programs and services without increasing local taxes?
Well, we've been doing that by using long-term planning. As you might recall in our previous conversations, we have our five-year strategic plan. We, in that time of having our strategic plan being the foundation of our work, we created a long-term financial plan as well. So, as we all recall, there were federal funds in years past due to, the American Relief Funds and things of that nature. So we made sure to leverage those funds in a way where we did not utilize those funds in a manner where it would be investments that would be ongoing. So also we've thoroughly invested in our curriculum, and we work with partners such as a curriculum that we use of HMH is the curriculum. And we would have long-term agreements so we could properly plan for the future, being cognizant of our taxpayers. And with that, we do have a slight increase in our state aid. I know foundation aid has been a topic throughout the state, but we had a slight increase. And that's because, we have a diverse population with some students that have different needs. So we do receive that. We had a slight decrease in our capital expenditure aid, but that's because the district hasn't had a completed capital project in some time. And when the last one, which was completed around the 2017 school year, the district receives aid on a yearly basis. So, you know, upon the completion of the current projects that have been approved, we will receive the capital expenditure aid again in the near future. So that is the gist or the overall summary of how we've done that. So it's long-term planning. And keeping in mind the focus of this year's budget was we've invested long-term our curriculum, our programming, we've enhanced our programming, and we want to ensure that we're continuing to provide the best opportunities for our students. So we wanted to maintain the programming while being understanding and cognizant of and being fiscally responsible for our taxpayers and our community.
The district has stated the budget maintains all student programs and services. What does that include specifically for families and students? And are there new efficiencies or alignments that are being introduced in this budget this year?
Well, we do have some efficiencies or alignments. We're restructuring some of our departments that helps provide some savings. So we've looked at adjusting some of our technology department, bringing that fully in-house. We've used other partners to support with that. Our business office, we're making some adjustments, and we're refining some pieces with that. But most importantly, we've looked at enhanced our operations. We've taken the steps, and I have to commend our assistant superintendent for business, Mrs. Lorene McKenna, who has done a great job with our personnel department as well, and in collaboration with our director of HR of position controls and things of that nature. So we're really making sure to address everything with a fine-tooth comb to ensure that we're leveraging every piece of funding that we receive. So those are some operational efficiencies that we've created. As for alignment, our inter-reading curriculum, our interventions that we use, our reading intervention programs, we work with those partners in a way of long-term planning, because it takes time to learn the curriculum for us ourselves as educational professionals to master it so we can provide the best learning opportunities for the students. It allows us to invest in these long-term and plan for the future. And coherence, which is one of our main pillars, is really at the forefront. We want to have curricular and instructional coherence. So that's why we try to leverage our resources and plan them out accordingly, and using our curriculum management plan that we have that allows us to project the timeline, and thus that allows us to better leverage our funding to ensure that we're maintaining these programs. And also, you know, we've added recently the Syracuse University Project Advanced courses, and we've made sure to continue that and continue investing and invest what we have allotted into that programming. We also have created replacement plans, right? So technology has a certain shelf life, right? So our Chromebooks. So over the past couple of years, we've created replacement plans that allows us to prepare and for the future so we can maintain that consistency and or coherence.
We've talked about the capital budget or the capital campaign project before, but that's also on the ballot.
Yes, that is our Proposition 2. And we had the $42 million project that our voters approved. And a portion of that, and due to the most recent legislation dealing with classroom temperatures, in the third phase of that project, we had HVAC updates with our Univents. And looking at that project and working with our architects, LAN Associates, it was, we reviewed thoroughly all different options. And if we would, and it was in 40 classrooms, learning spaces, give or take, if we would, in the previous plan, those Univents were not able to be adjusted for air conditioning. And our elementary school is an older building. It's got a brick outside, so you can only imagine being on the third floor in a 90-degree day. It gets very hot, which is not conducive to student learning. And also with the legislation in mind, if we, you know, in our decision process and what we analyzed in our buildings and grounds committees is if we would continue with the initial plan of our previously approved project and installed those univents, there'd be time where we would have to remove them and reinstall new ones, which would be very costly in long term. So with that, and again being mindful of our taxpayers, we do have Proposition 2, which is a capital project proposal of a nearly $7.5 million dollars to add many items, specifically those univents and an updated boiler as well, to ensure the health and safety of our students and our faculty and staff.
Also on that ballot, 3 Board of Education seats up for election.
3 seats open, board positions open with 5 candidates. And you know, it's always important for everyone to use their rights to vote.
And you're encouraging folks to get more information at several public sessions leading up to this vote on May 20th. What can people expect if they attend, and why do you think they should make time to do so?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we do have some sessions coming up to provide information on the proposed budget and also for Proposition 2. And those are, we have our coming up on Monday, May 5th at 5 p.m. We will be presenting our proposed budget before the Liberty Town Board. Then on May 6th, we have our annual budget hearing at the Liberty High School Auditorium starting at 6 o'clock. And then following that, on May 8th, prior to the start of a spring concert, we have another presentation. We're calling it a budget dinner and a concert, and that will take place at the High School Media Center starting at 5:30 p.m. And on Friday, May 9th, I will be at the New Munson Diner from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. to have conversations. Anyone can just stop by. And what we will be providing in these presentations is what I've explained today of how we're maintaining our program, kind of giving an update. You know, as we know, there is no set state budget right now. Our budget proposal is based on the projections we have received. And we'll provide more information as it comes at those meetings and the current information that we have shared with the the next year's proposed budget and next year's proposed 0% tax increase levy and any information answering any questions that our community may have regarding the Proposition 2 for the proposed capital project for the health and safety components for the Liberty Elementary School.
Where can voters go for more information on the budget and the vote itself?
They can always go to our website. We have information there under our business office, and they can always reach out if they have any questions at questions@libertyk12.org. And we are always willing and happy to answer any questions that our community may have.
Dr. Patrick Sullivan, the superintendent of the Liberty Central School District, we've been talking about the proposed budget. There's a school budget vote on May 20th.
And just, the polls will be open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Liberty High School Media Center on May 20th for the vote.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and sticking with our school focus in this first half of the show, schools across Sullivan County are recognizing the vital connection between health and learning
with one school nurse leading the way. I spoke with Megan Mullally-Gore, Director of Health and Wellness at Sullivan 180, along with Mary Davis, a registered nurse who has dedicated 20 years to serving students and staff at Livingston Manor Central School, to hear about the Sullivan 180 Wellness Committee and how they're creating healthier schools, why school nurses like Mary are essential to this mission, and the creative ways LMCS is bringing wellness to life, from walking challenges to farm-to-table programs.
Wellness committees are very, very important to the overall school health and wellness implementation. So wellness committees exist as a committee made up of a diverse group of people. So hopefully a school nurse, school administrators, students, parents, and other school staff, so that they can work on the school community health and wellness. And hopefully by doing that, they're able to implement a wellness policy. Livingston Manors is extra special. Mary will tell you why. We really want nurses to join their wellness committees. And Mary, as you just heard, is a nurse.
And Mary, why is it important, do you think, to have school nurses like yourself involved with wellness committees like this one?
We are a integral part of just making sure that the cafeteria is involved, the gym teachers are involved. We are notoriously famous for not oversight, but more like, okay, here you have you're able to do something really well. Here, let's work together with this guy. They're able to do something really well.
And you've been a nurse at Livingston Manor for 20 years.
Yes.
How have you seen health and wellness evolve over that time?
I thought about that when she asked that question. We had a wellness policy back when that McDonald's, the fellow supersized me, Brenda, mm-hmm. the supersized guy. He was a big proponent. We also have the state started keeping track of BMI. So another reason why, oh, look, we have this high rate of obesity. Let's do something about it.
How do you think that this wellness committee influences your work?
Yeah, everyone wants to make sure that, oh, even the children, even so young, oh, can I have this? Is this good for me? There's a lot more water being they're drinking a lot more water. They go outside for classrooms. They go outside. Phys ed is constantly outside. More injuries, but that's all right. they pay attention to what they're having for lunch, what they're having for snack, for celebrations, all sorts of things.
Why do you, this is for both of you, why do you think student and staff wellness too is more important than ever before, Mary?
Oh, the staff is very much involved. We're competitive at heart. We have like a walking club where which team can walk more steps than the other. What else do we do? Oh, there's volleyball games, staff versus other people. Mm-hmm. We had a basketball game. They're trying to organize a softball game, by the season.
Sounds like they're heavily involved.
Oh,
and
yes.
Megan, why do you think student and staff wellness more important than ever before?
Well, I think for mental health purposes, being one, we know that mental health and nutrition are super important this day and age. The reason that Sullivan 180 came to be was because of our mission, which is to turn around the health of Sullivan County one degree at a time. And we know that our county health rankings were low. We're moving up those rankings, but having shifted our focus to prevention and to the youth, we thought that the schools would be a wonderful conduit to getting this work done. The wellness committees are at each school are those people who are boots on the ground making those changes. So Livingston Manor has made significant changes to their wellness policy. Mary brought up healthy celebrations. Instead of kids bringing in cupcakes multiple times a month, they're able to get a blender bike and do healthy smoothies. They could take out a celebration cart and do a non-food celebration, which is very
yes.
healthy. So there's so many wonderful things that are going on.
They also have that spirograph. Where you go on the bike.
Yeah,
on the stationary
for art class.
Art class.
Yeah,
yes.
It's so cool. So instead of making a smoothie, you're making this beautiful art, right. But you're also being physically active. So yeah, it's a prime time for us to focus on youth, focus on schools, and get our wellness committees to have that diverse representation from the school community.
What makes LMCS and Mary such strong partners in this wellness work?
Well, I think it's because effort. You – oh, she's yeah. saying it's a group effort.
It's a group effort.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yes, everybody wanted to participate. Everybody mm-hmm. saw the benefits from this.
Yeah. You have a lot of administrative support.
Yes,
John
we do.
Evans has been very supportive. They have an innovative food service director.
Yes.
So Stephen Rogers.
The farm-to-table.
Farm-to-table, farm-to-school mm-hmm. efforts. If ever you have the chance, you should swing by their cafeteria. They yes. are baking bread fresh every morning. They're mm-hmm. making bone broth soup. It's really remarkable. It's what we want in all
really
the schools.
Good.
Do you have to be enrolled in the school? Can I come over for lunch?
Sure?
It sounds good. Yes. If you guys could see a major shift in school wellness over, I don't know, let's say the next 5 years, mm-hmm. what do you think that would be? What would you like to see? It's already moving. It's right. already, as we've said, improving the life and wellness of people in the county as we mm-hmm. see ourselves move up these rankings. If you can look ahead, what's one thing you'd like to see happen, Mary?
Wouldn't it be nice if like the graduating class continue this? Wouldn't it be nice mm-hmm. if we saw like in a few years that the kids who were in middle school or high school are still, oh, look, hey, look, that guy is walking the track, or that mm-hmm. guy's running the track, or he's running the half marathons that we yeah. have going around in the community or something.
That would be ideal. For Sullivan 180 and the Empowering a Healthier Generation program, our ultimate goal is that these efforts continue if we weren't there. We want sustainability. Eventually, we would love to see youth obesity rates going down. Mm. We want to see increase in mental health resources. And there's just so much opportunity for the whole school community to get involved in as well. There are Spartan clubs popping up all over. So the Spartan race yes. at Bethel Woods, Manor now has one.
Yes.
And we always invite the community family members to get involved as well. So that's what we're hoping.
Yes.
Mary, what advice would you give to other school nurses who want to take a more active role in wellness initiatives?
Their voice is really heard, at least for us. Our voice is heard. What your opinion matters. And she would be integral in like being able to coordinate stuff.
Mm-hmm. Megan, where can folks get more information about the Sullivan 180 Wellness Committee or get involved?
So you could get involved by visiting our website, which is www.sullivan180.org. You can click on Empowering a Healthier Generation and see what all of the schools have been up to. But please look at your own school, the district that you reside in, and reach out to the wellness coordinator there. And there's a spot for you on the wellness committee.
Any final thoughts about wellness and a healthier community before we go?
Our weight room is open to our community. We have a really nice walking track.
Mm-hmm. And a beautiful trail.
The nature trail is brand new. And yes, Miss Lemire and our Spartan Club are going to be competing soon.
Yeah, we're excited.
Stay tuned.
The only thing that I'd like to add is we are empowering a healthier generation. So in 5 years, I hope that the kids are able to say we are the healthier generation.
Very cool.
Megan Mullally-Gore from Sullivan 180 and Mary Davis, school nurse at Livingston Manor Central Schools. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, Girl Got a Hike, guided hikes that encourage women of all ages to get away from the grind and connect with the ground. It's featured on the latest episode of Cat's Cast, the Catskills podcast. We'll learn more next. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we wonder about the secrets of nature and meet the scientists finding the keys to the universe, like black hole maven Jan 11.
I think it's really important as a scientist not to put a belief system first. The whole point is to explore the unknown.
Come explore with us. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Fridays, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On the latest episode of Cat's Cast, the Catskills podcast, they feature Girl Got a Hike, guided hikes and backpacking for women. The episode takes folks on an overnight camping trip led by Melissa Goodwin, a licensed guide and founder of Girl Got a Hike, which is aimed at encouraging women to connect with the outdoors. Reporter Olivia Sipple shared her first camping experience in the episode guided by Melissa. She's joining us now along with the host and producer of Cat's Cast, Brett Berry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Tim. Happy to be here.
Olivia, so your first camping experience, how did that go?
You know, it made me very nervous. I was sleeping outside for the first time. I was very afraid of bears, but everything was fine. We did get a little bit of rain on the second day, but it ended up being a great experience.
And Melissa Goodwin, who founded Girl Got a Hike, how did you guys come across this story to feature her and this mission of hers to encourage women to connect with the outdoors?
So funny story.
Melissa. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Olivia.
Oh, funny story. We actually met at Cauliflower Festival in Margaretville, but Brett and her met before.
Brett.
Yeah, I'd met her a few times, usually at these kinds of outdoor fairs in and around the Catskills, and always wanted to do a story about her guide service. Olivia was the better choice to report on this because it's a guide service for women, so it was very appropriate that we sent her out, and she was a great sport about it.
So, Olivia, what are we going to hear in this excerpt? You have a whole episode here, but we've got an excerpt of this about the experience that you had with Melissa.
In the excerpt, you're here about my experience, and you're just here about me going on my first camping trip. I mean, it was great.
Do you want to keep camping?
Yes, I do. I definitely want to go on another camping trip soon.
All right. Brett, I didn't ask you. Are you a camper? Are you a camper, Brett?
I camped a lot when I was a kid. I haven't, not so much as an adult, but it is enjoyable. Although these days I kind of like a comfortable bed in the bathroom.
You're into the we'll look for the glamping episode with you then. How's that?
But I'll tell you, Tim, when we set Olivia up for this story, she texted me about a day later with a whole bevy of gear that she had purchased for this. So she took it really seriously, and she's definitely outfitted for the next one if and when she chooses to do it.
All right. Let's take a listen to the latest episode of Cat's Cast. Girl Got a Hike, Guided Hikes and Backpacking for Women, featuring reporter Olivia Sippel. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
So I started with finding hikes that maybe I had been to before by car, but that could also be accessed by public transit. So it basically started as a once monthly public transit series hike for women.
I have been wanting to go on a hike with Melissa Goodwin and her guide service, Girl Got a Hike, but there is one issue. I am not a woman. And so, our production intern, Olivia Sippel, so graciously stepped up and embarked on an overnight camping trip with licensed guide Melissa Goodwin, who runs this fully outfitted hiking service to encourage women of all ages to connect with the outside world. Here's Olivia with the story.
Hello, my name is Olivia, and this is my first camping trip ever. I met Melissa at the 2024 Margaretville Cauliflower Festival as she stopped by our table to say hi to Brett. Lucky enough, I was tabling that day. We hit it off, and by the end of our conversation, we'd set a date for an overnight hike and camp in the Catskills. I am originally from the city, from a family that you would not consider the outdoorsy type. We never went on hikes, let alone a camping trip together. Now, I've been on day hikes, but nothing like this. But in the hands of a licensed guide like Melissa, I knew this would be a fun trip. 1 month later, I reconvened with Melissa on the trail, and she told me about her trail name, Click.
Have you heard of trail names?
No.
Okay, so when people do a long-distance hiking trail, like the Appalachian Trail, which is 2,190 miles, Georgia to Maine.
Oh my God.
I've hiked the whole thing, and people will get what's called a trail name. It's kind of like your alter ego, your persona. So my trail name is Click.
Click?
Because of my camera. So
I need to make up a trail name.
Yeah, well, usually, I mean, there's different ways to come about it. Some people say you can't pick one for yourself. I don't agree with that. But I feel like it should come from trail. For me, it came from trail. Like the trail and the people on the Appalachian Trail were the ones that like helped solidify that it would be Click.
Yeah. Now, the Appalachian Trail, or AT, passes through 14 states stretching from Georgia to Maine. The trail is completed over 2,000 miles and can take 5 to 7 months to finish. For Click, she got to cherish these moments with her dad as they took on the adventure together. Although she'd already had hiking and camping experience, this was the first time Click set out to complete a thru hike.
I grew up day hiking, car camping, so going to like a state park campground where you would drive the car in, set up a tent. There's a picnic table most of the time, at least in the New York State ones. There are also bathrooms. So my parents took me and my brother out to do that kind of thing where we'd hike or we'd swim or we'd canoe during the day and we would camp in a tent at night. But I wouldn't say you're limited, but there is a limit to how far out you can go in a day if you have to come back to your camp at night. So the idea of being able to get a little deeper into the woods was appealing to me. I had heard of the Appalachian Trail. My dad had wanted to hike it since he was like 17. It became like a bucket list for him. My mom was very nervous and said, "I don't want you doing this alone." And he said, "Oh, well, Melissa's a freelancer. Like, maybe she'll have a little time. Maybe she'd want to come out for a month with me." And I kind of realized, yeah, wait, I'm a freelancer. Like, maybe I can do the whole thing. You know, maybe I can take the time and energy. And so I did. From there, I just haven't stopped.
And while our hike would only span about 12 miles over the next 2 days, it's important on any hike to sign in. So at the Meads Meadow Trailhead in Woodstock, New York, that's exactly what we did.
So this is a logbook from the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation. You want to sign in case something happens to you when you're out there, that they know where you've intended to go. A lot of times on a day hike, you're coming back right to the same spot. So we put the number of us, two, and then there's... Hey, do you need to check out? You need to sign it. Okay, here, I will leave it open for you.
Thank you.
So we're telling them essentially where we're going in case we don't come back. That's one, safety. Two is that the usage that they then see in that book helps to fund the region. You know, maybe it says we need to have more rangers in this area, or we need to have more trail stewards, or, oh, this trail's getting super heavy use. Like, maybe we should send out a volunteer group to do more trail cleanup, stuff like that. So, yeah. So this, you'll notice this trail is a bit wider than what we were just on. And that's because at one point there was a hotel up here and we're heading towards a fire tower. So that's why it's a little wider and clearer right here, as opposed to the footpath that we were just walking through earlier. So, we're at the ruins.
Wow.
Yeah. This is like a hotel that I think it burned down like three different times. Yeah, I think there were a lot of mountaintop hotels that, you know, were all the rage at one point for people of, you know, who could afford it.
Click and I approached our first lookout for lunch. She explained how to maintain a healthy diet while on the trails.
So in the outside of your pack here, I've got some dill pickle flavored potato chips, which are delicious.
Oh, nice. Those are great.
And there should be another Ziploc with like a tortilla, and I gave you peanut butter. So yeah, just sit down your sit pad, wherever you want. This is kind of like typical trail lunch. The cool part is you can bring whatever you want, as long as it's, you know, doesn't need refrigeration. But in terms of getting a lot of calories in, right? Like a tortilla has 100 calories, probably a burrito wrap, right? And then I've got tuna, you've got peanut butter. This is 110 calories, single serve pouch. I'm gonna throw mayonnaise and relish in it, so that'll add a few more. The peanut butter cups are like 200 each. So you can eat it on its own, you can spread it in the tortilla. You can do like a trailside pizza. In a way, you could do sun-dried tomatoes and a cheese stick and, you know, pepperoni if you eat it, all on a tortilla. Flour ones, as opposed to corn, hold up a lot longer, too, in your backpack. So if you're going, you know, many days between resupplies.
As we walked, talked, and ate, one thing I wanted to know is what inspired Click to start their company and what makes her want to continue.
So after... through hiking, you know, after spending 6 months on trail, it definitely had an effect on my life. You know, I had day hiked mostly before then, but I just, the need to just
get out more often and be out more often was in me, essentially. And people, friends, acquaintances, knowing that I had done this trip, would ask me, you know, hey, thinking about going backpacking, you know, do you have advice? One friend, she was like, a friend invited me to go do this trip with him in Yosemite this summer, and I want to make sure I'm fit. Like, can you load me up with gear? Can we go practice? Right? So she and I started going out, and then there would be like another female friend and another female friend. And it was just, I like hiking with everybody, but there's just something special about hiking with other women where there isn't the, like, I don't want to say like one-upsmanship, you know, there's just sometimes there's some ego involved when in mixed company, or less like, oh, you only went that far? I'm going to go this far. You know, I can flex if I need to flex, but yeah, it just became a really fun thing to do. And also, I'm comfortable going out for a hike on my own, but it is really something different to go out with other people and just have that space, have that time to have long conversations, to pick them up here and there throughout the day, and just catch up. Just such a great way to connect and get to know people. That mixed with people asking me advice on where to go and how to get there. And then, you know, my husband getting a little tired of me asking if he wanted to go hiking all the time was sort of like, well, if I'm feeling this way, they want to get out there with other people. I'm sure other people are too. There's plenty of meetup groups and there's other guide companies that exist, but what can I bring kind of to the table that's a little bit different? And so I studied to get my guide license and picked off all of the requirements. And then I just put it out there.
Though she's had so many other groups before, being one-on-one with Click was something really special. It somehow made me feel more comfortable with the fact that I was about to be in a tent for a whole night.
When I get to introduce other people to these new experiences, there's just something very peaceful, right, about being out in nature and seeing someone's, like, smile at a viewpoint. Or, you know, maybe they were previously unsure if they'd be able to get to the top. And then they get there and are, like, rewarded with a great view. Or just simply, I've never been outside in the rain and didn't, realize, like, oh, if you just wear a rain jacket and, like, bring enough layers, it kind of expands their idea of what's possible, and you can just like see that change on their face or in their understanding. And yeah, I'm not gonna let weather stop me, within reason, of course. So that's really helpful for me to like know that I'm helping to facilitate that for someone else. And I enjoy the planning of trips like this. There's a lot of logistics that can go into how do I get somebody outside and on this trail who doesn't have a car, you know? Okay, let me look up the bus schedule. Let me look up taxi services. Like, not letting those be a barrier to entry. If you've never done it before, figuring all that out, figuring what to wear, what to bring, what to eat, it's a lot. It's a lot to consider. So if I really enjoy those things and I can do that for someone else, take the hard part out of it, then they get that like faster track to the mental peace that comes with walking in the woods. You know, I think that's really a big part of it. But for myself, I've really found that even as much as I enjoy being outside and I have the skills and I have the experience of doing it on my own, I sometimes won't do it if I don't have a hike on the calendar. Once other people are counting on me, Like, it actually, that accountability helps me to get out and enjoy it too, because it's really easy in modern life in general, but also being a freelancer and having a foot in two worlds, to let all the things I have to do or that seem very urgent take precedence. And that ends up keeping me inside. I just get caught up in emails and should do's, and I forget how much I need that counterbalance of the outdoors just to kind of like let my mind have some space. It's almost like I didn't even realize at the time when I started putting hikes on the calendar that it's really that accountability to other people that will ensure that I get outside too. Once I've gone outside, once I've had that hike, even if you don't want to get up in the morning, if it's still dark and it's raining early on a Saturday morning, like, never want to do that. But as soon as I'm there, I see the other people and I'm on trail, it's like, oh, this is awesome. And wow, how much better my week is going to be now that I got to go for a hike on the weekend.
Many thanks to our production intern, Olivia Sipple, for braving the trail for an overnight with Girl Gotta Hike. Melissa Goodwin's guide service is online at girlgottahike.com. For WJFF Radio Catskill, this is CatsCast with Olivia Sipple and Brett Barry.
And thanks to Olivia and Brett for that. You can hear the rest of that episode and all of the episodes at catscast.com. Checking in next with another one of our favorite podcasts, You Can Trust Yourself with Megan and Maggie. It's coming up next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the exotic sounds of Don Tiki, the Benny Silver Stereo Orchestra, and Martin Denny. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jason Dole. The White House, you may have heard, has proposed eliminating federal funding for public media in its budget, issued an executive order to block support for PBS and NPR, and wants to claw back funding that Congress already approved. The threat to public media is real, it's here, and it is growing. The stakes have never been higher. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org. That's protectmypublicmedia.org. And tell Congress to protect Radio Catskill while there's still time.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Now, diving into something we've all experienced, those moments when making even the smallest decision feels impossible, only to realize we're probably just hungry or tired. Does that sound familiar? Joining us are Megan and Maggie, hosts of the You Can Trust Yourself podcast. In the latest episode, they unpack how our physical needs, like sleep and food, directly affect our ability to think clearly, make decisions, and ultimately trust ourselves. And breaking it down with science, practical tools, and a whole lot of self-compassion. Megan Spencer is a clinical mental health therapist in training, and Megan utilizes modalities through person-centered theory and specializes in anxiety. And Maggie Fitzpatrick is a coach specializing in optimizing mental and physical human performance. They're joining us again this morning, as they do every Tuesday now. Hi. There you are. Hi, there you are. Hey, so let's dive into this. What inspired this episode about hunger and fatigue and impacting decision making, Megan?
Oh yes. So this was like an episode that it was like, of course we have to do this episode because these things affect us on a daily basis. So as we were, you know, planning the episode, we were like, well, these two areas affect our ability to trust ourselves and to be able to make decisions every single day. So Maggie and I really go through a lot of the, you know, like practical moments that those of you listening have felt of like, why can't I make a decision? Why can't I focus right now? Why am I not able to like trust myself with something as simple as what we want for dinner or what we want to do with the rest of our day or whatever it may be? And so we really dove into a lot of physiological reasons that that may be impacting our ability to do that.
You mentioned these moments of indecision, as I mentioned at the introduction, which are really just signs that you're hungry or tired. How can we start recognizing some of those signals, Maggie?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think being able to recognize it is one of the most valuable pieces of this puzzle, right? Because the sooner we can recognize that we're in one of those states, the sooner we can do something about it, right? Whether it is taking action on that thing or just reframing in our mind that, like, I know I'm hungry right now, but I need to get this done first, right? So how can we start to become aware of it? I think that something that I like to do is reflection. And we've talked about this so much with Moving Toward Health. We talk about this a lot on the podcast as well. But when we can take a moment to look back on our day or look back on the last couple days or whatever is coming to mind, we can start to pick up on patterns, right? And when we notice those patterns in the past, it becomes a little bit easier to recognize those patterns in real time. So it's not so much about expecting ourselves to become perfect at recognizing it right away. It's more about how can we slowly start to learn what our tells are, what our signals are, because it might look different from me to you, right? And then be able to recognize what we need in that moment.
And I mentioned you guys talk about science here too. Who can briefly explain the hunger hormone ghrelin? Is that right?
Would be me. And this
did
is
I
our,
say it correctly?
This is our gremlin friend.
Gremlin.
Okay, the ghrelin is the gremlin friend. Ghrelin is a hunger hormone, very normal in our bodies, right? But the thing that happens is when we're hungry, our body releases this hormone. And if we don't eat, it keeps releasing more, right? So we perpetuate the problem on purpose, right? Because our body's like, hello, hungry, hello, hungry, hello. I don't know if you got the message, but we're hungry. You know, and so that's why it feels like there's a moment where it just flips, where all of a sudden you're like, I can't think, right? Because the hormone levels in your body have changed at that moment. And now we are no longer focused on whatever decision we're trying to make. We are focused on the fact that we need food. And when we can recognize that, we can either eat something if we can, or just recognize what's going on and be able to calm ourselves down a little bit.
You guys are going deep into this episode. You connect this whole idea to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What is that? And how can that understanding help us make better decisions? Megan?
Yes, so I'll take that one. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs is really just a theory, a framework of we have basic needs as human beings. And if you, you know, have a second where you want to Google Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's actually in a pyramid form, so you can kind of take a look at it. So for the purpose of this week's episode, we really started at the basis of that pyramid of what are our basic needs as human beings before we can go, you know, any higher, essentially. And a lot of those include sleep, food, rest, making sure that we have adequate, you know, water, shelter, just really, really basic needs. And I really pulled this up, especially being a clinical mental health clinician in training, we talk about this a ton, especially with clients. There's so many things that clients want to work on, myself included, when I've been in therapy, of wanting to just talk about these really important pieces of our lives. And we have to make sure that those basic needs are met, because then if we don't, we can actually do more harm than good. And so I talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs weekly with clients and how important this is to have a baseline of wellness, so that we're able to move on to the next level of treatment.
Self-talk also plays a big role in this episode. What's one way listeners can shift their inner voice to build more self-trust?
I think that, you know, especially in times, we'll relate it specifically to when we're not feeling our best, right? We're hungry, we're tired, something physiologically is going on. It's really easy to start beating ourselves up, right? In that moment, be like, why can't you just do this? Like, what's wrong with me? Or, you know, that's kind of my self-talk, but it can look differently than that too, but it goes negative quite quickly, right? So when we can recognize that, hey, my body's just hungry, I'm just tired, like there's nothing wrong with me, this is very normal, right? I wouldn't say it's usually beneficial to flip all the way to positive, right? Because we don't always believe that, right? We don't want to say things to ourselves that we don't necessarily believe, right? But when we're in a situation where we are, you know, struggling to trust ourselves or struggling to make a decision, I'm going to let Meg touch on this too, but there are things that we can say to ourselves to get us just to a baseline level of belief, right? And increase our confidence a little bit. And I would love, Meg, for you to share what you specifically share in the episode about talking to ourselves in the mirror. But it's about getting to like a baseline of neutrality and slightly positive versus like flipping all the way and saying things we don't believe.
Megan?
Yes, I love that. Maggie and I talk about this a lot on the show, and I'm a big believer in affirmations. It's used in the therapeutic setting and all of the things. However, it's really hard sometimes to say things that we don't have any belief in. So I love Maggie's language of like getting to neutrality. So I shared this week in the episode, there's a simple exercise you can do, and I hope all of you listening will try it. I just want you to look in the mirror this week. Take a few moments by yourself in the bathroom, in the mirror, wherever you are, and I want you to start to say things and language around, I'm going to start to trust you. And it's going to feel really weird at first. But when you look yourself in the eyes and you don't necessarily say, I can trust you yet or anything like that, but you say the truth of, I'm working towards being able to trust you. It's you and me here. I'm working towards being able to trust you. We're moving towards that. There's something very powerful about speaking that to ourselves and knowing that we're moving towards being able to have what we want. And you can use that exercise with a variety of things. But this week, we really talk about it with self-trust.
And finally, without giving too much away, what's the homework for this episode and why does it matter?
Meg just gave you the homework, okay, actually. That's right. We did give it away, but that's okay because we want as many people to do it as possible. Because, okay, I know what you're thinking, right? These people are absolutely crazy, or that sounds nice, and then you're not going to try it, right? So you got to go try it. I promise you're going to start to feel different when you start to talk to yourself in that way.
Well, no, it's good. It's a good advice, and I believe that I'm connecting to the Bruno hierarchy of needs. I need a snack and a nap.
Yes,
it's You Can Trust Yourself, the podcast hosted by our friends Megan and Maggie. You can hear it wherever you get your podcasts, and also you can hear it on our website. Go to WJFFradio.org and click on the shows, and then under podcast, it's in the Community Voices section there. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Also made me realize that maybe we should hear this song. Whoops. There we go. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. Gonna make it right. As I turned up the collarboard, my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Disregard a broken bottle top and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his way.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3, on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, we speak with some of Broadway's biggest producers on how to make a hit from nowhere.
I want to be as fearless as I was when I first started producing.
and how to salvage a $20 million flop.
I was very devastated. I didn't understand it.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Some heavy thunderstorms this afternoon are anticipated. The National Weather Service says some of those storms could contain heavy rainfall, gusty winds, and small hail also possible, extending into the evening hours and cloudy skies after midnight. Today's high 61, a low 48 tonight, tomorrow. Overcast with a slight chance of a rain shower, a bit of a break in the rain, a high 64, but then back to more rain on Friday and Thursday and Friday, excuse me. But for the weekend, it looks to be partly sunny and highs in the upper 60s. WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. It's Radio Cat.